Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today we're telling you how to maximize your income in 2023.
I like how you added 2023 onto the end of the title there,
Joel. I want to be this year, man.
Well, okay, so what's crazy is I feel like this could be an episode that we would have or should have or could have done like 5 years ago. It's a more general type of episode, but it honestly kind of demonstrates our tendencies, like our personal tendencies. Like you and I, we're pretty frugal dudes, and because of that, I think we do tend to talk about topics that lean more in the cutting back side of the equation when it comes to your personal finances, mm-hmm. right? But this is a topic that we need to talk about more, and we are remedying that today. We're going to talk about how you can maximize your income this year, how you can make more money. I'm excited to discuss this today.
Yeah. And I think, by the way, some of the things that we're going to talk about on today's episode, you're right. Like, this is a topic we could talk about at any time. But I think 2023 is a year where there's extremely low-hanging fruit, more so than most times. And so, yeah, we'll get into that too.
That is true, man. All right. So I've got a little story for you.
Story time with Matt. My favorite.
Pull up a chair. Have a seat on the floor. Crisscross applesauce. So I was biking home yesterday, biking home from work. And I am lucky in that there's a path, like a walker, jogger, bike path that goes all the way basically from our office, from our little clubhouse here, all the way home. And I was approaching an intersection, where a road crosses over the path. Went ahead, started to bike across it. And I look up and there's a car coming at me pretty quick, and I'm thinking, surely this guy's gonna stop. And
he's going right for you.
Well, there's a stop sign there for him as well, so like, I mean, by law he has to stop. But nope, he did not, dude. And he got within maybe like 2.5 feet. I mean, he was freaking close. I was pretty mad. I was pretty pissed right in the moment. And so I was like, all right, whatever. Kind of got all grumpy, kept biking, and he had turned the direction that I happened to be going as well. And so I caught up to him at the stoplight, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to have a few words with this
confrontation
guy.
Confrontation time.
Yeah. And so I pulled up next to him on the passenger side of the car, knocked on the window, and I was just like, hey, I told him what's up. I mean, in a kind way, but I just wanted to let him know that, man, he almost took me out. But I guess what I wanted to ask you, this made me think of how we often do frugal or cheaps on the show. And do you feel that I was being like a jerk bike commuter, or was I just being a concerned biking advocate who is politely informing this guy that of his actions?
Like, no, I mean,
what would you have done, do you think, in that
if
situation?
If someone got really close to me in a car when I was on a bike like that, like, and I felt endangered, then yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Hopefully I would take a moment to calm down like you did, and then knock on the window and have a conversation. But
yeah,
I think
luckily I had a stretch of biking to where I think I was able to burn off a little bit of because had he stopped right in the moment, I think I would have been like, hey man,
how did he respond when you talked to him?
So okay, it seemed he was genuinely shocked. And so what I asked him, I was like, hey, did you know that you got really close to me? Like, so I was being kind. I wasn't looking for a fight. Again, I felt like I was in my right mind at that point, like when I knocked on his window. And I knocked on it gently, you know, kindly. But I was just like, hey, do you realize that you got really close to me back there at the stop sign? And he looked at me just with shock, like horror on his face. He's like, no way, did I really? He's a teenage driver, does not seem that he has been driving very long.
Okay.
And
it's
so,
a good lesson for him. And honestly,
yes, exactly.
There are much worse ways to learn that lesson.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I just wanted to like educate him and to inform him that, like, man, there are other bikers out here. I'm not the only one. And he's not going to be able to learn and maybe pay a little more attention. I don't know how he didn't see me, though. I mean, literally, we never locked eyes, but I was right there.
Teenage drivers. You never know.
And more people, distracted.
Even non-teenage drivers, just everyone, looking at their phones more and more while they're driving, even though it's illegal in many states.
Yeah.
I'm glad you told him.
Yeah, and I wanted to share that, I guess, too, just to... Like, I don't want to scare folks. This doesn't happen very often, but I do think it is important to watch out. I think it's a reminder to me as well to consider even like turning on my blinkies like during the day, because I do think, okay, maybe if I had those flashing, you know, on the front there, switching it, because during the daytime you can switch it to flashing, at night always keep it on solid to actually light up the road, light up the path. But I'm like, you know what, I ought to keep those blinkies on even during the day just to make yourself a little more visible. It was during the day when I was riding home, but it's still kind of in the winter where it's a little darker by the time we get out of work.
Bike safety matters, you keeping yourself safe, but then also hopefully kindly educating other people on the road.
Yep.
Bikers exist. Even up here in the burbs where we live, there's bikers, and I like seeing bikers on the road, and I want to see more people feeling free to bike those roads because, like we actually talked about last week, at the end of last week, Matt, we talked about just how jammed these roads are with congestion, and we need more bikes on the road to relieve some of that congestion, but drivers have to be courteous to make that a possibility,
That's
too.
That's right.
Well, all right, but I'm glad you're okay. And
thank you.
Thanks for Matt's story time. let's move on. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. This one is called Painting Dreams by Fidens Brewing. We'll give our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode. This is a West Coast IPA. Mm-hmm. So,
you know what I meant to do was, since the last episode to this episode, I was planning to look up how to actually pronounce the name of this brewery, because I would feel so bad if we're not getting the name right, because as we will share later on, this is a fantastic beer, and I want to make sure they get all the props.
Okay. I can't imagine there are too many possibilities for the pronunciation of this.
Fidens or Fiddens?
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know.
But I would think it'd be Fiddens if it was two D's, but it's one D, so.
You never know.
Go with a hard E.
It's a proper name. They could say, you say it in a way that sounds completely backwards.
That's true, they could. All right, but let's
they
talk.
Have every right.
Let's talk about maxing income, Matt. That's the topic for today's episode. And
let's do it.
And in particular, there are specific ways that we think that people in 2023 are going to have extra abilities to do this. And I'm sure there are at least a few How to Money listeners who have set out goals already this year. And maybe one of those for a lot of people is to lose weight in 2023.
Sure.
I think that's a common one. I mean, there are just a lot of folks out there who want to shed some pounds and hope that endeavor is going well so far, if that's something you've chosen to do, you're working on. But Matt, let's say, you know, just imagine if some of those folks, they were only focusing on eating less, if they were just intent on cutting their calorie intake, if that's the only way they were trying to achieve that goal, is that going to help them out? Sure, right? That's going to make some of a difference in helping you lose some weight. But focusing solely on that one route to weight loss is also going to have some massive shortcomings, right? There's this whole other realm that you're leaving untouched, namely exercise. Cutting calories is great. You know, my wife, she says Weight Watchers is super helpful when she's trying to lose a few pounds. She likes to go there and kind of type in what she's eating on the app. It helps her kind of hit her diet on all cylinders so that she's,
helps you to track that data.
Yeah, for sure.
I get it.
But she's also hitting up the gym four times a week, right? So she's taking the both and approach, which is what's going to help you get there a whole lot faster. And I think similarly, frugality, like you've talked about, like that's something we talk about a lot on this show, but it can only get you so far.
That's right.
At some point, you can't cut expenses anymore, or you're eating just rice and beans. You've boiled it down. You've reduced your budget to such an extent that you're completely unhappy, right? And so you've got to grow your income in order to make more progress on your financial goals. And so we're going to give a slew of thoughts on how you can maximize your earning potential in the year ahead on today's episode.
That's right. And, you know, like I said earlier, I think you and I both lean towards frugality, but whether or not that's your tendency, it just comes down to your own personality. But like you said, frugality, it won't pay the bills. And if you can't get a handle on your spending, it's also going to be impossible to out-earn that crappy habit. So both of those are important. And another problem for a lot of folks is that they want to make more money, but they just don't know how to make more money, right? And so many of the ideas that come up when you Google this, like, how do I make more money? The results are oftentimes going to be crap.
Drop shipping on Amazon. It's like, oh, exactly. Yeah. No.
Earn $30,000 more per year by staying home.
Right.
And they almost all involve like trading your time for money, right? Which is something that we all have to do to a certain extent. But time is a limited resource. It's one of the few limited resources that we have in our lives. And we can't do that in perpetuity. And so today we're going to offer some of the most practical advice that we have for increasing your income. You know, again, cutting back, it feels like something that is accessible for everybody. I think oftentimes folks, including us, tend to lean towards that because it just seems very doable. Mm. And I don't think everyone feels that way when it comes to increasing their income. To them, it feels like one hold too far or, I don't know, one more hurdle that they have to jump. It doesn't seem like it's nearly as accessible, but we are here to say that we think it is.
Yeah.
And that's why we're dedicating an entire episode towards increasing your income.
And well, I think a lot of the advice that we give about frugality is applicable to nearly 100% of the people listening, right? And when it comes to earning more, well, so much depends on the industry you're in and how long you've been in it. And there are just so many other factors. But so we're going to try to give the most broad-based advice that we can on today's episode when it comes to how to earn more. You probably won't be able to take every single one of these tips, sure, and implement it into, yeah, your life. But if you can just take a few of these and try them out at your place of employment or as you're shopping the open job market, you can find that it will lead to meaningful increases in income. And this might be intuitive, Matt, but I feel like it's worth saying out loud. We talk about investing a lot too, mm-hmm, in addition to frugality, but it's a lot harder to invest when you've got a meager income, when you're not making enough. And some folks are just way overthinking like their asset allocation. When they're only investing, let's say, a few hundred dollars or maybe $1,000 a year, they're hoping to coax outsized returns out of the dollars that they're putting into their investments. And these folks and a whole lot of others would truly be much better served by working towards increasing their investable cash flow by making more money than by optimizing,
right,
their investments
instead. Or finding yet another way to cut back on their expenses,
yeah,
so that they could invest a touch more.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, I saved $10 on Netflix,
yeah,
when what you're leaving on the table oftentimes is the potential to earn thousands of dollars more every single year.
Mm. Yep.
Way more than that Netflix bill. And so instead of spending hours obsessed over which streaming service to cut, or obsessing over which funds to stick your dollars into in an attempt to juice those returns, the payback is going to be higher if you instead look to increase your income and you just stick to the boring investments that we always talk about. You're not going to get rich via the investment decisions you make. You're going to get rich via your work and your income by increasing that income and the ability then to invest more of it.
That's right. Yeah, this is an instance where you want to make sure that you're asking the right questions. You want to make sure that you're asking the $30,000 question, not the $30 question. Sometimes we can get so preoccupied with the details that we miss the bigger thing that's lying there in front of us.
For sure, yeah.
And the good news is that the job market right now is pretty hot. If you're someone looking for new work, you're in a strong position.
The job market is like Hansel and Zoolander.
So hot right now. last year was the second best year for job growth in U.S. history. Despite many predictions of a souring job market, they haven't really materialized. There have been some layoffs happening that we hear about that get all the headline attention, specifically from a few specific tech companies. But they've been fairly minimal. And there are still 1.7 jobs available per job seeker. So that means that if you're out there looking, you have your pick of the litter to a certain degree. We took a trip recently and we were still passing bonuses being written on pieces of paper in fast food windows,
yeah,
that are still Wendy's, available
McDonald's,
for a lot of folks.
They're still saying, hey, look, extra $500 or $1,000 just for coming to work here. That's in addition to higher normal hourly wages too.
Exactly. So there's a lot of employers who are still looking to fill empty positions. And while many of the things that we'll discuss in today's episode will be applicable next year and the year after that as well, you do have more ability in the current market to increase your income because of how hot the job market is. It's not quite as nice as it was 7 to 8 months ago, but workers still have massive leverage to get paid more today.
For sure. All right. So that does make me think, how do you know if you're being underpaid? Because that's probably a really important thing to ask.
That's a good question.
You might be at the top of your profession right now. You might be the equivalent of the Aaron Judge for the New York Yankees, and you're hitting, he's not going to be able to make more money than what he got this past offseason in that labor market. And like, nobody's going to be able to say, we'll actually double your pay. Come on over here. He's at the top of his profession. But how would you even find out if you're not? Well, it helps to know what's going on in the market in order to be able to maximize the utility of our time and our skills. Like, for instance, a lot of truck drivers and folks in the service industry, like you're talking about, Matt, they've seen pay rates rise significantly over the past year. Part of it is those sign-up bonuses. Part of it is just more robust starting salaries. But it's massively helpful to pay attention to the current trends when shifts are happening in your industry. That way, you can know whether or not you are getting paid appropriately. And so if you're looking for resources that can be continually helpful, we'd say sites like Glassdoor, or even just perusing job postings on the web that include salary ranges that can help you see what the pay range is for similar positions to yours. Those are good ways to kind of figure out, well, what's going on in the market and where am I at in relation to it? That can help you just assess where you fall on the scale and how much potential there is for you to increase your income, even if in the end you opted not to make any changes based on some of the recommendations we're about to give.
Yeah, and also I think just talking about money, hopefully that is something that you've done with your friends. That's something maybe that you've done with your coworkers. And if that's if those are discussions that you're having, then I think it's going to be easier for you to determine whether or not you're getting paid well compared to your coworkers. So for instance, if you're at a company and you know there are some new hires, and if you realize that they're getting paid more than what you're getting paid, and you've been there for 6 months, maybe a year and a half, well, I think that's maybe it's time for there to be a discussion. You know, like if you haven't talked to your boss, if you haven't gotten like a performance review, that's a bad sign. Yeah. That okay, you know, it seems like your pay has been stagnant, and this is beyond maybe just even just the standard cost of living basic percentage increases that most folks oftentimes get.
And that's just what we'll talk specifically about negotiating at your current job or and how to go about effectively increasing your pay if you find yourself in a position like that. But what you're talking about kind of still is just the market research portion of this.
Yeah, market research and I think a part of that market research is just talking about it with other folks. It's not only relying on Glassdoor, Indeed, LinkedIn, different job sites, which are all very important.
You want a bunch of data points really to kind of inform
exactly.
your perspective.
You want the internet, but you also want real life.
Yeah.
Real life data as well.
Agreed.
Dude, one thing that's worth considering is how to use the new pay transparency laws to your advantage as well when it comes to making more money. A few of those went on the books in early 2023, including in California. And that's in addition to others, I think New York as well, that have been passed by other states in prior years. But when California gets into something, because of just of the sheer size of the state, it's got like a tenth of all Americans like live in the state of California.
Oh, yeah. I think it's like the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world if it was its own country. So
it's,
yeah.
It's massive.
It has an outsized influence.
Yeah, it's got all these ripple effects on everywhere else, on all the other states. So this year, you're going to see a lot more pay ranges listed on internet job boards and listings. Granted, some of those pay ranges, they're not always going to be helpful because the spread, it's so ridiculously large.
Somewhere between $40,000 and $400,000 for this position. You're like, I don't know what that means, okay?
But I do think that they'll function sort of as a backstop, maybe some back-of-the-napkin math to help you to see where your pay stacks up against others within your industry.
Yeah, those pay transparency laws, they're not necessarily some sort of bulletproof thing that's going to aid you in this negotiation, but you are. The more you peruse those boards, the more you see those pay ranges listed, it's one of those other data points, and you want as many as you can to help you understand what the market is paying for people in positions similar to yours or the position that you want to have. That can be just another arrow in your quiver so that you are able to negotiate for higher pay for yourself. And because of some of these new laws, Matt, unlisted jobs are actually starting to become more common. I think some people are trying to avoid having to post the pay. Some employers are trying to avoid having to spell it out. Hey, this is what we pay for these jobs. But a lot of the unlisted jobs are actually six-figure jobs. They're actually jobs that pay really well. How do you get one of these jobs? If they're unlisted, then
a little more word of mouth, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of how you actually go about getting one of those is having a good network in place so that you're notified when an awesome job comes along that you're a good fit for. We're going to talk more about how to do that, along with a bunch of other tips for how to maximize your income this year. We'll get to all that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, man, we are back from the break, and let's talk about how you can ensure that you're going to make more money this year at your place of employment.
And if you don't, you can sue Matt.
There's no guarantee attached to this episode. We can give your email at the end of this episode. But we just talked about how it's really important to know the market. It's important to know the pay ranges that are out there, to know the salaries of similar jobs as yours, given the degree of experience that you have. That's sort of like an external factor to keep in mind. But it's also important to pay attention to the internal factors as well. It's important to make yourself more valuable in the market. And by that, I mean, it's not necessarily about getting an expensive advanced degree or learning new skills, right? Although those can be smart approaches depending on what industry you're in, what job it is that you're looking for. But I'm kind of talking about, first of all, like your mindset, your work ethic, and what you add to the company is what is going to make you promotable. You may not be gunning for like the position of CEO, but many of the top companies have leaders that slowly moved up the ranks in the company over the course of years and decades. And so it's important to keep in mind that it comes down to the value that you're able to provide the company, but also it's important to develop an owner's mentality.
Yeah, what Jocko Willink calls extreme ownership,
yeah,
right?
Dude.
Which I think is just a good way to live in general, but very, very helpful if you're trying to make more money.
Yeah, I mean, that's what is going to get you recognized by your manager, by your boss, because it's going to make them look better as well. And so they're going to want to keep, they're going to want more people like you working under them, working on their team, and just finding ways to make yourself indispensable by going above and beyond is going to make your current job not only more secure, but it's going to put you in line for better positions as they become available. They may even create a new job, a new position for you if you're good enough. I say all that, the small caveat, there's a fine balance there, because going above and beyond, that also sounds like working more. And so it's not necessarily that we want you to only work more hours, but work additional time or put extra effort in a way that's going to reap you the greatest rewards.
You don't want to give sweat, blood, and tears in perpetuity for no return on your effort to an employer, because that's like the old model, right? And I think the new model is quiet quitting, but there's a balance of when you're working, you're working hard, right? And you're doing good and you're doing your best. What Cal Newport, he says, be so good they can't ignore you. And I think the better you are at your job, the more results you're able to provide, that has tangible rewards. And I think maybe that's gotten a little lost in a shuffle as we talk about how to increase pay. Oftentimes it is just the external, find out how much you're worth and go get it somewhere else. But sometimes it is just being better and improving yourself and what you're able to provide to your current employer in the here and now. That makes a difference too.
Yeah, I think there's a degree of discipline that you can bring to your job. I think, I mean, we know some folks and they will readily admit, they say that, like, I don't really work hard. Like, my job is kind of a joke. It's a non-factor in the joy and the satisfaction that it brings me. I do the work and I get paid, but it's very clear that there's either not a path for those folks to advance, or you're just not interested. You're happy with the status quo. Maybe you make enough to live a comfortable life. But it's so important to keep in mind that may not always be the case.
Yeah.
Things might change. Maybe your partner is no longer able to work after for various reasons. But basically, I do think that there is a level of intensity and discipline that you can bring to your job. But depending on what you want your career to look like, I think developing more hard skills might be necessary.
You mean like the ninja skills I just acquired recently?
Absolutely.
I get a pay raise for those, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
you took a class in order to learn those skills. But that is what we're talking about. We're talking about taking like courses or getting certifications. I think those can go a long way depending on your industry. But before you go out there and apply to get an MBA, which, by the way, can cost a ton of stinking money, it's important to weigh the pros and the cons and to determine, to see if there's going to be a way that you can get that training for free, or at least maybe you can get it on the cheap. For instance, maybe your employer will help pay for the skills that you're looking to acquire. If so, obviously take them up on that. That's a fantastic benefit that your employer can offer. But just be careful before taking on debt specifically, not to mention the time that you're spending as well, but just the cost associated with getting that degree. Thinking that, you know, the hope of these skills might someday come in handy. I think that can be a massive gamble. We're always for self-improvement and finding ways to make ourselves better folks, but we're also looking to make sure that we can do that on the cheap. We want you to have more certainty about how these hard skills that you're acquiring, how they will impact your future before you go out there and shell out some big bucks.
Yeah. Like, so Emily, I talked about this before. My wife, she is in school, grad school, to become a licensed therapist. And there's like additional training that she can take that is given to her at a massive discount to become certified in this extra special niche, right? And she has chosen to pursue it. One, because it's inexpensive, and two, because she can see that people that get this certification get paid more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the perfect time to do it. If she were to wait until after she graduated, she pays full freight for that. And so, yeah, there are all sorts of little ways. It makes me think, I had friends who worked at Starbucks, Matt. They were baristas, or they were even working their way up in Starbucks, and they had access to free education. They didn't take it up at the time. Now they're paying for it themselves out of pocket. And so when you have something like this that's offered from an employer, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And you might want to reconsider whether or not the education you can procure for free or for cheap is in your best interest.
Yeah. In that case, I think they're just not looking at the gift horse at all. They're like inside playing Nintendo.
That's right. Forgetting the gift horse exists altogether. Well, and another thing too, you're talking about hard skills, but soft skills are important too. And it's not something that we talk about enough, but emotional intelligence goes a long way when it comes to getting paid more or moving up the ladder in your career.
It's not just that IQ, it's that EQ as well.
Yeah, and something as simple as knowing how to effectively participate in a team meeting. Like, meetings are overrated, I get it, but they exist at a lot of workplaces. And so if you know how to do it right, like, that can help. But getting along well with your team members, having the ability to manage those relationships, to inspire creativity in others, to be, I call it being the John Stockton, who was like a point guard for the Utah Jazz, wasn't necessarily so much a scorer himself, but man, he dished the ball well to everybody. Like, he was the best passer. Hmm. And so, like, the people that do that, he's still memorable because he was so good at that. And if you can be kind of the John Stockton of your team at work, I think that goes a long way. And in addition, like, taking and managing feedback from your superiors well, that's a crucial skill to making faster career progress too. We actually did a deep dive about some of these like unspoken rules to workplace success with Gorik Ng back in episode 415. So if you want to kind of hear more about that and how to increase your to level up your abilities there. That's episode 415.
Yeah, I believe those software skills are one of the things that suffered the most during the pandemic. Obviously, a lot of the laptop class was able to work from home. That was necessary in order to continue our economy and businesses to continue functioning especially back when we didn't know the severity of the virus and what that meant for us, whether or not we should be disinfecting our mail, Like these are all things that freaked us out early on. But what that meant was that we weren't hanging out in person in real life with our coworkers. And I think there's an element of like humanity that was lost. And now as more employers are calling folks back into the office, I think a result of that is we're going to see productivity skyrocket, because I think folks are going to realize, oh, I like you. Like we've been working together for years now, but I forgot how great it was to work together in person, to collaborate in a way that not only makes the business more profitable, but that's also fun. And so yeah. I think there's sort of like a self-gratifying, like a self-fulfilling aspect of honing those softer skills as well. Completely aside from just like the business and the profitability side of things.
Sure, agreed.
But let's talk about networking, sort of like real estate, right? Location, location, location.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So you've heard the saying, it's not what you know, but it's who you know. And of course, it's not going to be 100% accurate, but we do think this is as close to the truth as you're going to get in a pithy little phrase like this. And the great thing about growing your network, about meeting other folks in the industry, is that anybody can do this, right? Like, it is not off limits to anyone. It just takes a bit of intentionality. It takes some focused effort. And by doing those things, it's going to put you on the path to growing your network. And it's not just building up and growing your network too, but also maintaining that network and then committing to, something like regular check-ins with folks in your space, within your industry. That is going to be crucial as well. Look up some different conferences, like where you can get to know folks in your space. Like, send them an email. See how someone you hit it off with at the conference, see how they're doing. Maybe you knew about a project that they're going to be on or a new position that they're taking on. And as you do that, make sure to seek to provide value however it is that you can. Because I think the more that the folks within your network feel that you're seeking to be helpful, that you're trying to find different ways to put them in better positions, the more keen that they're actually going to be to help you out in a pinch, the more likely they're going to be to keep you in mind when that new six-figure position is about to be available. Yeah. And they're not going to post it officially, but they're just, they start putting the tentacles, they start putting the feelers out for folks like you, who is a nice guy or a nice lady, and you're caring and you're empathetic and you check in on folks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's huge. And I think we underestimate the importance and the value of building a good network. I just had a friend text me the other day, Matt, and he was like, he sent me a position that I didn't know was available. And he was like, I don't know. I mean, I know you hate Matt now, so you might be interested in this. And I was like, no, I still love Matt. We love what we do. So I'm not, but it was kind of,
where are you getting your info?
But it was just, it was kind of a goofy thing, because it was like the Braves PA announcer. And I've always liked baseball. And he was like, you were in radio. This would be perfect. I'm like, yeah.
Wait, like during the games?
Yeah. During the games.
I thought you said a cool job. I thought you said that was like your dream job.
I mean, it used to be the actual announcer for like the radio broadcast.
But
Announcer, like in the stadium, not as much. And still,
got it.
Not going to happen. Not interested anymore. That was a dream from long ago.
That was single Joel. Yeah. Before I had kids Joel.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But it's funny how people just think of you for certain things. I had a former boss reach out again recently, and he's like, hey, there's maybe some work I'd like you to do if you're interested. Again, I'm not terribly interested right now, but the fact that people think of you because you've maintained those relationships matters. Mm-hmm. And so here's what we would say too: growing your network is also important, not just maintaining the one that you've got. A couple tips for that: you can literally proactively introduce yourself to others in your field who are doing work that interests you. There's no harm in that. Sending a brief LinkedIn message or an email to offer a kind word or introduce yourself, to even say, hey, do you have time for a quick coffee if you guys live in the same town? But we would also say, don't exclusively network with peers in your field, because a bunch of folks could stand to benefit from actually responding to maybe the kind of annoying messages they get from recruiters or headhunters in their field. You might say, listen, I'm not interested, leave me alone. But the current job even that they're reaching out to you about, to tell you about, or to see if you're interested in, it might not be right for you. But having a brief cordial convo with that person, letting them know what you're looking for job-wise, will make you top of mind for them in the future. So they might already know about another position that you're perfect for even at that moment. But a robust network is really what's likely to get you unlisted opportunities that we were talking about before. It's likely to get you thought of for other things, other positions you might not have noticed or you might not even have known existed. But that network, like you said, Matt, it's just like real estate, location, 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 network, network, network. If you boil it down to one thing that's most likely to move the needle over a number of years to help propel your career, I think it's that.
That's right, man. Yeah, and as your network grows, you're going to have more opportunities to take your talents elsewhere. Changing jobs, that gives you the highest probability for making more money. I will say the increased leverage that workers have right now, it's kind of shown up in the form of some like more goofy sounding movements over the past 12 months. There was quiet quitting, right? Which was like workers refusing to go above and beyond whatever their job title or description asked of them.
Yeah.
But then there's something called rage applying. and that's where you get so fed up with your boss, you get so fed up with your job that you start applying like crazy to dozens, multiple dozens of positions, which I will say the latter.
You have to do it with a scowl on your face, I believe.
Otherwise, you're not actually, you're just applying.
Yeah.
You're not rage applying. And I do think that's a better option, in my opinion. But if you don't like what you're doing, don't just check out. Don't just quiet quit. Look for something better. Like, be more proactive about it. Take your future into your own hands. And let's make sure that, you know, this something better, like that additional position, that it pays more too, that it's going to be something that is going to financially reward you as well.
Yeah, it's just kind of a goofy name to something people are doing. Of course, this started as a TikTok trend, like everything does now. Does any trend not start on TikTok these days? Not that I know of. But yeah, this rage applying is kind of become the hit thing. But the truth is, even though you're doing it maybe out of kind of the wrong emotional space, you're doing the right thing by applying, by seeing what options are open.
Your motives are wrong. You're doing it with the wrong heart.
Yeah.
But the end result might actually be good.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think, too, it's important to mention that don't just look for jobs in the current industry you work in. Because, yeah, like there were some actual new stats recently, too, Matt, that said that pay rates for people who stay put at their current jobs have gone up more than at any other time in the past 25 years since we've started keeping records on this data. But even still, moving jobs is almost always going to net you more on the income front. But it's worth mentioning that looking into a different industry completely could produce even higher results on the income front for you as well. There's just nothing forcing you to stay in the current industry that you're in. If your skills translate well, not just to different employers, but to different lines of work, start scouring those opportunities as well. I mean, there were headlines in newspapers across the country about how in demand teachers are, about how they can quit their job and go get paid more because of the innate talents that they have that translate well to other industries. So it's not just that teacher has other potential jobs lined up in the education sector. There are a bunch of other sectors that would welcome teachers with open arms because of the various talents they possess. So just a plug to widen your search parameters a little more than they currently are.
Yeah, and plus it's just fun to consider doing something completely different than maybe what you've done for the past 10 years. Like, it makes me think, like, I came to podcasting from being a photographer. That is not something that I thought in 1,000 years that I would ever do. But dang it, it sure is fun to have like gone from something that was, I don't know, I feel like I'm at two opposite ends of the spectrum.
They're still creative, but they're very different.
Yes, I love the creativity that I've been able to find in what we do. Obviously was able to find that in photography as well, but I think folks should be more open-minded to, and like it almost sounds counterintuitive, but to almost hit reset a little bit on their career and kind of start over from scratch. If you're looking for a way to kind of shake things up, maybe if you feel like you've either hit the ceiling or if you see better potential elsewhere. But as you're weighing those different options, as you're thinking about moving, obviously folks are going to look at what it is that they might be able to get paid. But something to keep in mind, don't just look at the salary alone. How your job impacts your life, the hours that you're supposed to work, and the job flexibility that you're going to be able to realize. These are all important to think through as well as you're considering a new position. Basically, we want you to think through like the total package of what a job entails, right? Including the total compensation package, but also the lifestyle aspects of a job as well. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics found that 31% of the average employee's compensation comes via the form of benefits. It comes via things that aren't listed out on those job listings, mm-hmm. you know, with a job title, two-line description, and a salary.
It reminds me of how, like, when we drive cars and we think about how expensive they are, oftentimes one of the first things people think about are gas prices, but those are actually such a small percentage of what you're at. But like these benefits that you can
receive.
There's
all these other things that you need to take like depreciation,
maintenance. We're paying
attention
to the headline salary number, but some of those other things buried a little bit deeper down about when it comes to the 401k match or when it comes to healthcare benefits, those things can be massive.
It could make a big difference, right? Like a new job, it might pay $20,000 more, right? Which sounds pretty awesome. But if they don't offer a 401k match, right? Like if you have to work longer days, so your lifestyle now sucks, the flexibility is now gone. If the healthcare premiums, if they're going to cost you, you know, substantially more, well, it might be more of a wash, right? From an overall compensation perspective, and it might not be worth the salary increase. It may not be worth the squeeze. And so a bigger headline salary number is, of course, massively helpful, kind of helps you get pointed in the right direction. But before you switch jobs based on that alone, make sure that you do your due diligence. Make sure that you've done some research, that you figured out how this change is going to impact you on all those different fronts in life, not just the amount that's going to be in your paycheck every 2 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's keep talking about this, Matt. Like, we want to talk about negotiation. I think negotiation is a really, really important part of how you get paid more, especially if you want to stay put where you are. You're not looking necessarily to pull a LeBron James and take your talents to South Beach or something like that. You just want to get paid what you're worth where you are. We'll talk about that, but we'll also talk about striking it on your own. Or if you're a freelancer, how do you get paid more for doing the work you're already doing? We'll get to that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are still talking about different ways that you can make sure that you're going to earn more money this year. And regardless if you are going to stay with your current employer or if you're looking to take your talents elsewhere, regardless, a tactic that you're going to want to employ is negotiating. So having a, you know, like a competing offer, that's one of the best negotiating tactics that you have at your disposal if you're looking to move. And honestly, even if you're wanting to stay put, if you have some interest from another employer, well, you're going to be far more likely to coax a raise out of your current employer.
It makes you kind of the hot commodity, right? Where they're like, wait, huh? Other people, wait, you getting offers from down the street? No. We definitely want to keep you. We're going to figure out a way.
Yeah, if it kind of instills some of that sense of scarcity.
Yeah.
You may no longer be there. But I think some listeners might hear the word negotiate and they might shudder. They may have heard my story earlier and they're like, I would never knock on the window of a car that almost that almost just hit me. That doesn't make me shudder. I'm definitely less fearful of doing that. But they see confrontation on the horizon. But negotiation, it doesn't have to be that way. I think it's important to keep in mind that this is a normal feature for many of the cultures out there. And I think we should all just maybe become a little bit more comfortable on this front. Negotiating more in general, I think it's a good habit to get into. And when it comes to getting paid more, I think it'll often make the biggest difference on the salary front, the ability to push back a little bit, to ask questions. Those are some of the characteristics that we want you to embody as you're looking to either stay put or with a new potential employer if you're looking to move.
Yeah, there's always, I feel like every time I talk to somebody about this and I can see the look in their eyes like, yeah, that's one step too far. I'm not going to do that.
They start sweating a little
bit. Yeah, there's like an emotional hesitancy, right, to even think about the concept of negotiation. I've had multiple people that I worked with kind of trying to talk them through the ropes of how to do this. And there was just a lot of fear, a lot of pushback. Well, I can't ask that question. Well, I can't go in there and approach this conversation with my boss. Like that's going to like make me look bad, or they're going to want to get rid of me after that, right? After asking for more money. But no. I think we often overstate the negative effects that having this kind of conversation, mm-hmm. opening up the negotiation process with our boss can have. And we also underestimate our ability to get what we want or deserve. And of course, you're going to want to detail some of your accomplishments that are particularly flattering alongside some of the awesome stuff you plan to achieve in the coming year. I think that's really important. Not just saying, here's what I've done in the past, but saying, here's what I'm going to bring to the table moving forward. I'm going to keep being awesome for you. And it's easier to ask for and then get a significant pay bump if you have some of those killer contributions to highlight, right? And like we talked about earlier, knowing what you're worth by shopping those similar positions in the market is going to give you the data to ask for a raise as well. So you want to kind of combine all those things into a pot along with a really kind presentation, essentially asking your boss to pay you what's fair given your contributions and what you could command elsewhere. And I think that term fair is really important because your boss likely wants to be seen as a fair person. And if you, based on your accomplishments and based on what you could earn somewhere else, are saying, hey, what I'm getting paid isn't quite fair right now. You're not accusing them, but you're saying, hey, I'd like to get paid what's fair. I think that actually is one of the best ways to present your argument.
Yeah, and I think there's an assumption that if you don't see anything, then your boss is going to assume that what they are paying you is fair.
Sure.
Because they haven't heard from you. another route you could take too is just skip the boss altogether. Go work for yourself. We're talking about entrepreneurship here, and it's not often going to be done overnight, but building something on the side, if you're so inclined, I think that's the best way to get to the point where you can fully work for yourself. Unfortunately, freelancing, it's becoming more normalized. 40% of American workers did at least some freelance work last year, back in 2022. And when we say freelance, we're not talking about gig work. That's different. It's important to make this distinction because, you might make more money initially if you're looking to take on some additional gigs via some different apps. But this is a losing proposition because what you're doing here is you're only trading time for money on an ongoing basis. It's okay to do that if you're in a pinch and if you need cash fast, but we don't want this to be something that you pursue long term. And also, we just don't want you to be dependent on a platform or a specific marketplace. And so that's kind of how we view gigs as maybe more of a negative. It's more of a choice of words, but we feel that a side hustle is something that is scalable. It has the ability to turn into a legit business over time.
It might not make you money in the here and now,
not as much money, yeah. But it's got more of that long-term potential.
For sure. Yeah exactly. And so one of the things, Matt, too, if somebody out there listening says, yeah, I want to get to that point, but boy, I'm scared to do that too. I'm scared to negotiate with my boss, where hopefully we gave you some helpful tips on how to do that and how important it is. But let's say you do want to strike it out on your own, but you're like, don't know that I can do that. I don't know that I'm ready for that. Well, first, you might not be yet. You might need to get that side hustle up and running a little bit further. You might need to have proof of concept, right? That you can make the income that you need by going it alone. But the other thing that you need to have is, I think the more money you have saved up, the easier it becomes to take more risk,
sure.
Right? And so if you have just...
Talking about some financial margin here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you have 3 weeks worth of savings on hand versus 6 months worth of savings on hand, yeah, no wonder you're scared if you've only got 3 weeks of cash sitting in the bank to quit your job and to move on and go do your own thing. But if you have 6 months, you're like, man, I have a lot of wiggle room here. I have a lot of runway to kind of get this business rolling. I don't necessarily need it to be spitting out as much as I was making before, at least right now. I've got the financial margin, the financial backstop, in case like I'm not making as much money as I've projected to make or as I think I'm going to make. And I think that matters a lot. That gives you the ability, that money in the bank. We've called it peace out money before, Matt. If you have that amount of money, enough of a stash sitting there, that's going to help provide the comfort level for you to be able to go strike it on your own, which, you know, you're not guaranteed to make more money, but a lot of entrepreneurs find that they are able to, because in the course of running their own business, they're able to make more than they ever were under the roof of someone else.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, and this is why we have the show, right? Not only is it important to, and why we talk about having financial margin and an emergency fund, not only do we want you to avoid the stress of living paycheck to paycheck, that's like escaping the negative aspects of handling your finances poorly. But we also want you to experience the positive things, right? Like, not only we want to remove the negative and we want you to inherit the positive outcomes. And oftentimes that's having more options, especially when it comes to the type of work you're doing. You don't have to say yes to everything that gets thrust in front of you. You can say, oh, maybe I want to do that, or actually, I don't want to do that. I'm going to start my own thing. I'm going to do this instead.
You have more choice. The more financial backstop, the more choice you have over what you do,
more choice,
when
more
you do
options.
It. Yeah, and the more you can hold out for more money too. You can be like, actually, no, this job sounds great, but I'm going to keep looking because the salary is not quite up to my standards. And you can say that with confidence when you have more cash than
hand. It's not about making all these smart financial moves in order to get filthy rich. Right? Like, we don't want all the How to Money listeners out there to be millionaires and to retire and for your life to look a certain way. No, like, we want you, it's what those funds, what that retirement, what that nest egg can allow you to then do, all the cool things that it's going to afford you, right? Like the ability to give tons of money away, or the ability to say yes to a different job that you never thought that you would consider doing. But also, like, if you have money on hand and you want to buy something cool that costs a little bit extra, or go on a vacation or something like that, it comes down to you and what it is that you want to spend your money on. But it's not the accumulation of just massive amounts of money and seeing your net worth grow. It's all of the different options that is then going to afford you. That's the goal. That's why we have How to Money, and those are the big lessons that we want to make sure that you're able to leave with.
And I think fear is what holds people back, one, from negotiating like you talked about, but also from pursuing entrepreneurship, from pursuing a career in freelancing, maybe, in something like that. And that money, it's not that the money makes you not fearful, but it can help you overcome some of those fears, I think. It can allow you to push past them, because at least that's one less thing holding you back, right? And then it's just you holding yourself back. But I think that's one excuse we make sometimes. And so if you do have more money saved up, it can allow you to feel like you can take the risk to go out there and pursue something that's your own, to build your own thing. Well, what if you are already a freelancer though, Matt? We've got a lot of people in the How to Money community who do have their own business already, who work for themselves. Can you just raise your rates on a dot? Like, just, is it that simple?
You could.
Like, kind of, but not necessarily, right? That's not the best way to go about it. So we would say this: if you're trying to increase your rates this year, which you should probably be trying to do, especially right now, given inflation and stuff like that, I think it's understandable. People almost expect price increases right now, but make sure you give your clients time to adjust. Don't just send them an invoice for more money one day and be like, surprise, I'm charging 20% more. That's not the way to do it. It makes me think of kind of how Sam's Club just recently did their rate increase at the Warehouse Club there, Matt. they basically said, hey, it's going up this next year, but we're going to give you a gift card, right, that covers the price difference of the membership from last year to this year. It kind of eased the pain, right?
Get them used to paying the new dollar amount, yeah. But in reality, look at the math. See, we got you covered.
Right. Making that transition just a little
sleight of hand.
A little less painful for people. And so I would say, like, if you're a freelancer out there, your rate increases, they're going to go over better if you send a note telling your clients why that rate is going up. You know, and even as you raise your rates, be cognizant of how you go about it in order to make more from current clients and to lose few to none in the process. So yeah, make sure you're communicating about why, talking about economic conditions, and maybe even highlighting improvements in service and what you offer. That's kind of a good way to raise rates. But just saying, hey, sorry, buck stops here, 20% more, that's not a good way to do it. You're going to lose people in the process. How you talk about it matters.
Honestly, for me, and maybe I'm different than other people, but like to me, like in my mind, it matters less about why it is that prices are changing, and it has more to do with the fact that it's just even being talked about altogether.
Yeah.
Because that tells me that they're being upfront about it. There's like a level of transparency there. And to that extent, like, I feel like it would even engender like more loyalty on my part, because it's just like, oh, okay, cool. It's something that they're being straightforward and honest with. As long as I like the product or the service or whatever, I don't even care why. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm happy to support that individual in particular, as we're talking about freelancers.
But some people, and depending on how long you've had that relationship with your client or whatever, like, it could demand a different kind of finesse.
Yeah.
Are they your main client who takes up half your time and three quarters of your revenue comes from them? You're going to want to make sure you handle that in a specific way. You're right. Like, it's going to vary across the board.
Exactly. Yeah. It's worth bringing up non-competes as well. We talked about this a few weeks ago, but non-competes might currently be preventing you from going down the street to make more money, but those might not be around much longer thanks to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. There's actually a massive number of Americans, especially ones who make less than $20 an hour, who are just limited, you know, by their ability to seek employment elsewhere and therefore more money within the same industry because of these threatening legal documents. And so if the FTC moves forward with its proposal, I think it's still in like the comment period until March or something like that. But that could be a massive policy step that would allow millions to earn more money without the fear of retribution from their employers, without there being some sort of lawsuit against you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important to note. And that's, again, why 2023, we're talking about maximizing your income in 2023. If this does come into effect, it's going to impact something close to 30 million people and their ability to make more in the industry they currently work in by going down the street and seeking to get paid more elsewhere. So, but that's one of those things that we'll continue to talk about on Friday Flights as we get more updates. And I think, Matt, when we boil it down, like, our listeners, most people out there, they've seen some of the stories or a TikTok video of someone saying, I doubled my pay overnight by switching jobs. I think you're going to be hard pressed to double your pay like that in one fell swoop. But it's also to say that's not impossible, right? Some people have done it. You can do it. But growing your income in a meaningful way by the end of this year, I think it's a good goal and it's possible for a whole lot of us. And money isn't everything, of course, Matt. You alluded to that just a second ago. If you love your job and it doesn't pay a ton, but it lights you up inside, more power to you.
Yeah.
Like, if you're working for a nonprofit, getting paid $35,000 a year,
you love the mission,
yeah,
you love the cause, that's awesome.
There's a lot to be said for that. And we're not cold-hearted capitalists who would throw away purpose and mission just for more dollars in our bank accounts. Like, that's not our style, and that's not what we want you to do. And I think if you can live a frugal life and do the job that you love, it makes me think of the listener question we had from a librarian recently. She loved her job. She's not looking to necessarily, like, double her income and quit a profession that she held dear. And I think that a lot of people feel that way, and rightly so. But I think still, like, most of us can make 2023 the year of making more money. That's what we want it to be for you. It's not just going to happen to us, right? As we sit here doing our normal thing, we've got to go out there and make it a reality. So hopefully you learned enough from this episode to do that very thing, and can't wait to hear the stories of your success this year in making more based on, yeah, the moves that you make, the questions you ask, the negotiating tactics that you implement.
That's right, man. You can't be passive about earning more money. This is something you have to go out there and get. You got to, like, hunt it down.
Like a lion on the savannah, stalking its prey.
Stalking a gazelle. Let's go back to the beer. You and I enjoyed a Painting Dreams. This is a single hop, West Coast style IPA by Fidens Brewing. What did you say at the beginning?
I don't know. Did I call it Fidens or Fidens?
I can't remember.
No, you called it Fidens. I called it Fidens.
Were you saying Fidens?
Yeah, okay. I called it Fidens.
I was just, I wasn't too sure.
I was like, I said if it was two D's, it might be Fidens.
It would make sense. Yeah. No, it's Fidens for sure. We looked it up. While you were talking, I got distracted and looked it up on my phone real quick.
As you are prone to do, which I'm not going to say. It's a little offensive. It's a little offensive.
But this was a fantastic beer, man. The last beer we had by them, they had like a new fancy hop that we never had before. And so...
Peacherine,
yeah. And I thought, you know, there's a slight chance that this beer is so good because there's a hop here that we've never had. But this is a single hop beer, which means it's only got one type. Mosaic, which other than like Citra is probably one of the most basic widely used hop in my opinion. I feel like I've had many a beer,
probably like Mosaic and Centennial.
Yeah. That's another one as well. Yeah, but what that tells me is that it's not the ingredients, it's how it is that they're making this beer. It's the technique. Those guys up there in the Northeast, man, I like how they do it up there. The way that they are brewing their IPAs in particular, it's just so stinking good.
Yeah.
This is just honestly, like we were talking about how this is like the best West Coast IPA we've ever had. And it's partly because it doesn't really taste like a normal West Coast IPA. It tastes like a New England style IPA masked, disguised as a West Coast IPA.
Yeah, it definitely was more bitter than the one that we had on Monday. But it still wasn't nearly as bitter as a lot of the West Coast styles we're used to drinking.
It didn't have like that grapefruit pith or pine resin action going on.
So to me, this was like the West Coast sister of the Monday beer and like not quite as delicious because I was obsessed with the one on Monday, but still really, really good.
Super good. It honestly reminds me of, I can't remember if it was Bissell Brothers or Trillium, but I remember having a session IPA by them, and this kind of reminded me of that. Still was like chock full of flavor. It had that hop sharpness, but just a lot lighter. Didn't have nearly as much of that complex mouthfeel that the one on Monday had.
Well, that's high praise, too, to compare this beer to Bissell Brothers or to Trillium, which are two of the best breweries in the country.
Yeah. So. Oh, absolutely. Well, the first result that when I was doing my phone searching while you were talking earlier, the first result that came up was that this is some like, you know, Uber beer nerd website, but they were saying that this is the best craft brewery that you haven't heard of.
Yeah. Under the radar.
It's completely under the radar. I love it. Now I'm going to start looking for excuses to take a trip up to New England.
Yeah.
Kind of check some of these guys out.
Big thanks to listener Michael and Emily for sending this beer our way.
Yes.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
It's awesome. All right, that's going to do it for this episode, Matt. If you want the show notes and links to stuff that we mentioned, you can find those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, Joel. So until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.